Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Good morning. This is Tracy Hales with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM and 103.3. Today I'm talking with Dr. Joanna LaPrade from Durango, Colorado, about her book Forged in Darkness, The Many Paths of Personal Transformation. Good morning, Joanna.
Good morning.
Well, I learned so much from your book, Forged in Darkness, The Many Paths of Personal Transformation. It's I think it's an important book. I think a lot of people don't understand so many of these union philosophies and points, and you made them so clear.
I appreciate that. It's an art to talk about Jung and kind of that complexity of the psyche in a way that people feel is approachable. And that means a lot to me because I really read something that somebody who isn't at a high level of Jung could tap into and connect to and maybe get curious about. So that means a lot.
That you've probably written this for people like me, lay people.
Exactly. Yes.
Well, before we get further, I guess we should tell our listeners what Forged in Darkness is about.
I guess kind of like the elevator speech of this book was, so this book is born out of my doctoral dissertation and went through quite the makeover to make it hope would affect and touch a lot of people. Essentially, the book is about the underworld. And when I say the underworld, I talk about kind of two aspects, both the unconscious parts of our psyche, so that which we can't really access and may not even know about ourselves, but still creates a foundation to our sense of who we are, and also the human experience of suffering, of trauma, of pain, of certainty, of, you know, kind of our experience of darkness. And the book is held in a Jungian way, meaning that I'm speaking from the ideas and the place of depth psychology, which in a lot of ways in its simplest form is just the study of the unconscious. And in order to kind of fill this out, the book is very mythic. It has an enormous amount of imagination, symbols, these ways in which we touch the inner world that don't come from ego and reason and rationality. And the entire project of the book is really about this call back to dark places and a relationship with dark places, whether that's the deep parts of ourselves or just the inevitable moments of loss and suffering that a human life has in it. And, you know, the human relationship with darkness and the underworld is deeply, deeply primal, and it's so original to the human psyche. And not having a relationship with these places in ourselves is a really new idea as far as kind of the trajectory of humanity. So the book kind of sets this up and then asks this, really making this statement of, you know, we've lost our way into having a meaningful and thus enriching relationship with the hard things that happen in life. And we've turned towards really prioritizing these, you know, these day world sensibilities that invite us to be perfect, to fix things, to have happiness, to have positivity, resolution, courage, control, all these things that we prioritize. And the consequence is that these dark places are seen as failures, things to very quickly overcome. And you know, as a psychotherapist, I see this in my practice enormously, is people coming in and saying, you know, how do I get rid of what's happening to me versus why is this happening to me and how can I learn from it? Because, you know, nobody has ever promised anybody an unblemished life, but we live in that fantasy and that expectation. And so part of the book is kind of talking about the elements in the modern Western world that have led us to reshape and neglect these darker places within ourselves. And take on the attitude of the hero. And this is a huge emphasis in the book, is turning to the myth of the hero, which is archetypally kind of the energy of the human capacity to understand that the old world is worn out in some way and begin the adventure of change and transformation that is an enormously hard adventure to step out into the world to. But we've really adopted a singular view of what heroism is. In the book, I talk about this in the form of Hercules, which is probably a mythic character that most of us know on some level. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Hercules is the great Greek hero who's courageous. He fights monsters. He's always victorious. He kind of, he adopts this and personifies this, you know, incredible capacity to just bend darkness to our will and be untouched and unscathed by it. And that aspect has really beautiful qualities to it, but the entire kind of meat of the book is about asking this really important question, that is, we need more ways to imagine our hardship. We can't just assume that everything can be beaten into submission.
Right.
I mean, there are things that happen in life that's not a useful or a healing or an empowering attitude. I think doesn't fixing and getting over, because you have to get back on the top as fast as you can where things are bright and you're back in control. And so the majority of the book is about returning to other ways of imagining how we could potentially interact with our hardship. And I do this through turning towards all these other mythic figures that make this journey. So there's other heroes that go into the mm-hmm. underworld whose individual stories and plots and interactions shine a light on really different ways of imagining or embodying how you could handle suffering. And whether it's the hero Aeneas, who is my favorite hero personally, but, you know, he does this incredible thing in the underworld in his journey where he follows a guide inward and he listens the entire time he's there and he really surrenders to his fate. It's a very, very, very different suite of personality, attitudes, characteristics, qualities than the strong get over it, solve, defeat mm-hmm. attitude that really dominates our thinking. And so, like I was saying, the kind of meat of the book is this conversation about other ways that we could handle hardship, and hoping that the people that read it might start asking themselves these questions. I moved this way, or what if this quality is present in my experience, and could I act this way? It's about bringing curiosity to this experience that's inevitably going to happen to you in your life, whether that's just a confrontation with yourself or the reality of, you know, a loss or an injury or something that can't be defeated. You know, I think this conversation is so important, partly because we live in such a mythos of positivity, but not only are we dominated by this city attitude, but, you know, despite all of our best efforts, the underworld is forcing its way into our lives. Like, I think we see this enormously on a collective scale right now, and seeps past our barriers, it pushes past our pills, it's, you know, it's leaving so many of us overwhelmed, fearful, you know, an enormous amount of anxiety, because we don't have a meaningful connection with these moments of hardship and seeing it as something that we can imagine into, and, you know, that our ancestors, through these myths, went through, that instead it's like so isolated. And I really want this book to be an offering to people, inviting us to really like notice what could be manifesting in our experience, in our thoughts, memories, our dreams, our images, and allow these different ways of handling the underworld to be something that could be meaningful and could feel alive, versus this, you know, enormously shameful attitude that we adopt mm-hmm. towards the shadowed parts of life.
I find it interesting, through reading your book, that we all have an unconscious and we all have mm-hmm. an underworld. And whether it manifests or how it manifests is different in everybody. Am I reading mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a nice underscoring of why we need more ways of kind of handling these places, mm-hmm. because not everybody's going to respond to hardship in the same way,
right.
or even encountering themselves in the same way. And so the more like the cornucopia that we could have towards imagination and imagining ourselves could free people in some ways to ask themselves, well, how do I handle hardship? And what are some images and some ways that I could think about that versus, oh no, like I'm a failure because I haven't been able to get over, you know, X, Y, and Z.
Right.
Well, maybe getting over isn't your project, your nature, or what's being asked of you right now.
I find that fascinating that sometimes we don't even know that we're experiencing the need to face our underworld, I guess. Many people mm-hmm. think that everything's fine except, mm-hmm. but like you said, we've been so tuned in, and the book really covers this carefully, that mm-hmm. it is more of a modern thing to ignore that, be away from it, get it, mm-hmm. you know, put it aside rather than embrace it.
Yeah, and I think there's a distinguishing, and I definitely talk about this in the book, is, you know, I'm not ever am I saying that these places are something that we should kind of, you know, throw our backyard picnic party for and celebrate the fact that our life is falling apart. Like, the human relationship with the underworld has always been one of trepidation mm-hmm. and fear and overwhelm and unknown. And I think in a lot of ways that's always been our relationship with our own kind of deep selves as well. But what's so different in the modern world is that we don't have a reverence for it.
Right.
Every other culture has had a relationship with, yeah, these are scary places. And because they are scary, we have to tend them. We have to worship them. We have to bring them into our lives so that we don't get blindsided by the fact that, guess what? Like, there's another half of life, and it's a scary one, and it's a real one. And the inner world is real, you know, and encountering yourself is going to come in dark forms as well. And none of that is incorrect. It's all a part of the journey. It's just we're so unfamiliar with that.
You have said in here that familiarizing yourself with this side of yourself will help you deal with things in the future that may come up and happen to you, hardships. And, you know, inevitably, mm-hmm. there's going to be loss. There's going to be hardship.
Yeah, I mean, suffering and its is, you know, in some ways what is shared by us all. And
right.
to be able to understand that and build your own relationship with that equips you for the next wave in of it in life and think, mm-hmm. oh, yeah, you know, this is a part of it. You know, I think a lot of people are really uncomfortable with that idea. And I think we live in a time where, you know, we think that if we lock it behind the doors and don't look at something, then we can go about our clean, polished life. But,
right.
you know, what we resist persists, and it builds an intensity, and it takes on other forms. And before we know it, whether it's our pain, our grief, or lost parts of ourselves, that stuff is going to come barging through the door.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's like it's almost counterintuitive, I think, to what I would call like a day world culture, that we would actually learn to have a relationship with these places to make it so that the next time something happens, it's almost like you have the digestive enzymes already for that
right.
dimension.
And I find it interesting that there's emphasis on dreams, where so many other
mm-hmm.
psychological schools don't emphasize paying attention to that.
And so, you know, in the Jungian tradition, the royal road into ourselves is through the dream. And Jung treats dreams as kind of spontaneous expressions of our psyche that, it's like, I don't want to get too theoretical, but it's like that function in a compensatory way, meaning that who we are in our kind of aware and conscious self will inevitably have limitations because of various aspects that we've put away in ourselves, and that the dream is kind of this like spontaneous representation of an offering of wholeness from the psyche, saying, you know, if you're missing this, pay attention to this.
Mm-hmm.
I always think of dreams as kind of like supervision from the depths, being like, actually, pay attention to that, thanks.
Right.
Or you don't think that this is a problem, but this is the problem that you're wrestling with right now.
Right.
And, you know, being a therapist, you know, I do so much dream work in my practice, but part of what's so incredible about dreams for people is that they are from you.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such a powerful experience when, you know, we work on a dream, for example, and it's saying, you know, you need to pay attention to this dynamic in your life or something like that. And I'll ask my client, you know, like, well, where's that tree? You're dreaming about it. So it's happening on some level. Mm-hmm. And it pushes people into their corners in a really rich way that doesn't come from anyone except their own being saying, hey, you know, like the question of life right now is this.
Knock, knock.
And people really listen to that.
Do you think that people then should keep a dream journal?
I mean, I think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think whether you are working with somebody who's trained to be able to understand your dreams or you just want your own practice, I think, you know, you can start writing them down. And, you know, a lot of the people that I work with over, you know, over the years that we've worked together, it's like they'll come in and they're like, oh, I had this dream and I think it's about this part of myself again. I didn't think, you know, it's like you can be, and it's about building a relationship with your own inner world. And I think, you know, so much in life pulls us out of that deep sense of who we are and trusting our authenticity in that or just feeling that part of ourselves. And working on a dream is such a cool way to pull yourself back into yourself expressing in a really imaginative, creative, symbolic way. And I think for a lot of people, it builds trust in themselves because in some ways it's suggesting that there is some part of yourself that is watching the ship, right? That wants something from you and is guiding that. And I think for a lot of people, in this age, it's really grounding and meaningful.
This might be a good time for you to read something for us from Forged in Dark.
Well, so I picked a couple small sections. I thought they're all from the introduction because I figured, you know, better to kind of just highlight some of the stuff that I'm talking about and show my style. So I started, where I thought I would start was just what is the underworld? And then a little bit of context. So I say in this book, I weave myth, religion, history, depth, psychology, cases from my practice, personal stories from colleagues, world events, and my own inner journey to guide you and me towards the remembering and return to the innermost riches of our own underworld. The underworld is the place of the unknown, the darkness, the hidden, the dead, monsters and demons, gnarly trees and cold fissures that wind deep into the earth. It's a place where we keep the discarded parts of ourselves, those aspects of who we are that our parents, educators, society, and selves seemed unfit and unsuitable. There is no more challenging threshold to cross than that between the day world and the underworld, between the conscious and unconscious parts of ourselves. Humans have handed down stories of the underworld for centuries, its purpose and how to get there. Whether traveling into caves of the earth or the depths of ourselves, the underworld is the experience of mourning, sacrifice, unwanted and difficult journeys, danger, estrangement from the past, uncertainty, and dissolution of who we once were. When we search within, inevitably we will find the underworld. Lost connections, failed enterprises, melancholy, haunting memories, embarrassing insecurities, deflation, and buried secrets. Friendships end, our sense of ourselves collapses, innocence is lost, loved ones break our hearts, and inescapably we are pulled downward to face the abandoned parts of ourselves, crying out for our loving awareness. Experiences of darkness are natural and necessary markers along the path of growth and discovery. We all have them.
We all have them, yes.
We all have them. And I'm kind of jumping a little bit to piece things together, but I thought this other section, you know, I say, we in the West disparage the underworld. We are not a deep culture. We don't value the underground parts of ourselves. We value functioning, not introspection, doing, not being, happiness, not suffering. For us, descending into darkness is counterintuitive. It runs against the grain of our upper world values, light, warmth, control, visibility, perfection, and accomplishment. As mythologist Joseph Campbell described, people resist the door of death. Many clients I work with share a sense that they cannot live up to their peers or cultural standards. We live under the reign of positivity, and it is a burden. Comparing themselves with the unvarnished, photoshopped images they see online, they think they're the only ones struggling. On social media, flawless images get liked, and the rejected parts of us get buried in a shadowy underworld not visible unless you know how to look for them. We wonder if we are good enough, joyful enough, happy enough, not how we will grow from the darkness of living. We have immense pressure not to suffer, yet our pain doesn't evaporate. When a part of us is hidden, we do not feel whole, and sooner or later it will come up and bite us. In ancient Greece, the dark was not only feared, it was also valued, even worshipped. Despite the terrors of the Greek encounters, encountered the underworld, they had a profound respect for the mythopoetic religious imagination they found there. We in the 21st century, on the other hand, prioritize the positive. Therapy is for the sick, and the underworld is the dwelling place of the pathological. Darkness is failure, or at minimum, bad luck. And the more we exclude darkness from our lives, the more it becomes our enemy. We think that for a happy life, the underworld must be avoided. We've forgotten that darkness is the herald of transformation.
That line right there is great. Darkness is the herald of transformation.
You know, and I think for me, I see, it's like, you know, in my work, my personal life, all the things, I've never witnessed any immense personal growth that has come from sunlight. I don't think it can be done. And this is a huge part of this book, is like, if you want the depth of the fullness of your life, then you have to meet these hard places. And you don't have to meet them in a specific way. You can meet them in your way, in many ways. Let's stop worrying about what we're going to do in those places and just worry about getting there and
right.
being there for 1 second, and then calling upon who we are and saying, you know, how could I be here? What does this mean for me? And how is this affecting me? So that we get the gift, which I think so many people in life have had, of coming out of the darkness and realizing, wow, something really profound happened to me there, and I'm not the same person that I used
mm-hmm.
to be.
Thus forged.
Forged.
Yeah, good title. I think that's the main thing I got from this, too, is that it's okay. It's part of us that we all
yeah.
have this aspect, and to check it out. Go there.
Go there.
Go there.
Well, it's like, go there the best you can, because, you know, falling into hardship is not a hard thing to do.
Right.
Most people can either remember something in their life, look at something in the world, touch something in themselves, whatever it is, it's like, that's not the hard part, ironically. The hard part is learning how to be in that place and coming back up. That's something that I talk about in this book that I found very interesting when I was writing my dissertation and kind of doing all this research that the book is based on, and finding out that most our mythic stories of the journey within, they talk a lot about the journey down into the darkness.
Right.
They talk a lot about what happens in the underworld. I could find two exceptions to this, but the vast majority, they talk about the ascent, the journey back up, in like one sentence or nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that really fascinating because, at least in my own experience, it's the ascent that's the hard part.
Right.
How to come back up, how to make meaning, how to be affected by what happened to you and changed, and then reintroduce yourself into the world as a different person. And, you know, the ascent is the hard part, and I think we all ascend in our own ways throughout a lifetime. And so, you know, that's definitely something that this book is rooted in, is asking ourselves the questions of the ascent and trying to draw attention to, like I said, finding yourself in the underworld is actually
mm-hmm.
not that hard.
Right.
Unfortunately.
Right. Well, who do you think should read this book?
Everyone. No.
Well, yeah.
of course. No. I would say, like we said in the beginning, this book is written for the lay person. I spend time defining certain, like anything I define that is a term that is not commonly known, I spend time explaining it.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to make it very simple in that sense. And I would say, if you are interested first and foremost in understanding your inner world in a deep way, this book is very rich.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be because I'm in the midst of this incredible crisis. And in some ways, I think this book is actually for people that are not in an incredible
mm-hmm.
crisis, because I think sometimes when we're drowning, it's not like we just need to drown until we can poke our head above the water. And then a book like this might be useful. But, you know, I think anybody who's interested in myth, anybody who's interested in kind of a deeper approach to psychology that isn't about, you know, what I would call kind of our pop or ego psychologies that offer quick fixes
mm-hmm.
and concrete guidance, this is the antithesis of that. It's saying there's nothing to do that you can do to fix this except be with it imaginatively and within your psyche. And so I think if you're interested in that deep way, if you're interested in Jung in any way, this book will be really rich for you. I would say, you know, psychology in general, myth in general, kind of history, the Western mind in general. But I think ultimately this book also has a lot of story in it
mm-hmm.
because it's myth-based. And so right. I tell these myths. And being somebody who's read an enormous amount of academic literature, I enjoy a story.
Right.
And so this book, you know, there's personal stories in it, mm-hmm. personal as in myself. There's also, you know, people that I've spoken to in my practice and in my life in this book. So there's a lot of human experience, whether it's the mythic or the more tangible personal. And so there is a lot of story here. And mm-hmm. I think people, you know, if you want to read stories about people suffering, not in a horrific way, I didn't want to make this book some kind of shock and awe crime TV
right.
thing.
Right, right.
But like just about the realness of life. Yeah, I think this book would be rich.
I do too. And you talk about depth psychology as a practice. Now, how does that differ?
Mm-hmm. The way that I typically like to describe that is if you imagine, say, like psychology is a big tent. There's a lot going on in that party.
Right.
And I think if psychology was a table, there are a lot of, when I say ego psychologies or pop psychologies, there are a lot of psychologies that are concerned about what's on top of the table, what we already know about ourselves, and moving that arrangement around in a more desirable place. How can we not think about that? Or how
right.
do we mitigate our anxiety? How do we, you feel panic, like how do we take breaths and, you know, try to challenge that panic? A depth psychological approach is interested in what is underneath that table and reaching down into the roots and the source of our behaviors, our attitudes, our symptoms, our experience, and pulling out whatever that is, which probably on some level you're not aware of what it is.
Right.
And putting that on the table so it can be in relationship with what's already out there.
Mm.
And because of that, it's source work. It's about, you know, like I never tell my clients what to do. I never tell my, like if my client's like, I don't know how to do that, I'll say like, why don't you think you know how to? Or ask
right,
me that
right.
question in another way. It's about pushing people to experience their own lives in a deeply inner and connected way so that they have the chance to live at totality in themselves. And in order to have a sense of our wholeness
mm-hmm.
as who we are, we've got to go find those pieces that we don't, that we, you know, perhaps society didn't allow in, or perhaps as a young child, we were told we were stupid, so we never
right.
challenged ourselves in, you know, our intellect, or maybe we were told that we couldn't paint, so we never, you know, it's like there
yes.
are a lot in life that takes us away from, you know, the fullness of our being. And I think a depth approach is focused on that, and it's focused on the root systems, because, you know, otherwise, if you don't pull up the root of a weed, it doesn't go away.
Right.
And
right. Good comparison.
So it's about learning how to have a meaningful relationship with these parts of yourself. And a depth psychological approach, particularly a Jungian approach, like we talked about earlier, it's going to have a lot to do with dreams, a lot to do with kind of, you know, the fantasy or the imagination. You know, like, for example, if somebody comes into me with like chronic anxiety and they're like, I need help with my anxiety. I want to know what the root of their anxiety is. And
right.
I want to know what their anxiety is trying to communicate to them. Because I think that to have such unfelt experience manifesting as that type of fear and panic, it's like, well, what's really going on there?
Right.
You know, what is it trying to communicate to you? Are you out of alignment mm-hmm. enormously in your life? And it's you know, showing you the warning signs? Or, you know, is there some part of yourself that you're afraid to look at that's being acknowledged? I mean, whatever it is, and it runs an enormous gambit. But I think ultimately it's about studying that, you know, the unconscious, the kind of mm-hmm. unknown layers to who we are. But yeah, I hope people, you know, are interested, curious, you know, and I think if one person reads this book and they ask themselves, like, wow, maybe the hard things that are happening to me in my life could be meaningful if I tried to understand how I could handle them, that it would be an enormous success for me
right.
as a person. And
right.
so, yeah, thank you for your interest.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm glad I discovered you. Now you have, we can probably find out more on your website, which is aionpsychotherapy.com.
Yeah, so ionpsychotherapy.com is my website, which has more about the book and more about me a little bit, and has like other ways to contact me. So,
well,
yeah.
Thank you so much for writing this
yeah.
and talking with
thank
us
you.
Today.
Yeah, of course. I'm always honored. I love talking about these ideas. They're so important.
And that was Dr. Joanna LaPrade talking about her book, Forged in Darkness, The Many Paths of Personal Transformation. Dr. LaPrade is a practicing psychotherapist, and you can find information about her at ionpsychotherapy.com. That's A-I-O-N, psychotherapy.com. This is Tracy Hales with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico, and 103.3 Durango, Colorado.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.